It's 5 o'clock in Pirate Country, and it's time to get pumped up with the P-Man. Hit the door and hit the road. 94.3 The Game is going to get you home, and the P-Man's not holding back.
Yes! Yes! Pirates win! Pirates win!
Bring on the Patrick Johnson Show on 94.3 The Game.
Holy mackerel! Oh, my goodness!
The flagship station of the ECU Pirates.
Okay, hello, hello, hello on a beautiful Thursday, on a Conley at Rose baseball Thursday. We welcome you in. Great P-Man here with you. Let's say hello to Philip the Ref Pilkington of 94.3 The Game and ECU Sports Network fame. Pilk, good afternoon.
How's it going, P-Man?
It's going. It's going, dog. This is the day on my East Carolina weight loss where I am eating 6 apples.
Okay.
The weight loss is steady, but we want to do a reset. So yesterday was steak and apples in my 2 meals. Today is 6 apples.
You're getting your fruit in, that's for sure. What kind of apples do you like, Patrick? Which one are you going with?
Well, I could have any apples.
Yeah, I know, but I'm asking which ones you like.
Well, I'm fine with them now because I've only been eating Granny Smith apples. The green apples are what you're supposed to eat on this. They are pretty good. I will not lie to you and say I always overlook the Granny Smith apples. So if I'm a little punchy or maybe punchier than normal, it's because I'm on this apple thing right now today. Right? I mean, that would explain it, right, Pilk?
Yeah. It's a good excuse.
Punchier than normal. Right?
Yeah.
Punchier than normal. Because I'm pretty punchy most of the time. East Carolina weight loss. By the way, on our most recent weigh-in, down 3 more pounds. I've lost a lot of inches in the chest, the waist, and the hips because they don't lie. And I have been given what you would call, now they're saying I'm losing weight in the face and the neck and arms and that kind of thing. If you want to get involved with this, I had somebody just ask me about this yesterday, and they, you know, kind of poo-pooed the, and I don't know what the cost, I just, what I've been told by others, I believe the cost was, and they were kind of, yeah, but I said, hey, think about all the money you're wasting on going to eat, you know, junk, or buy junk at the store and bring it home, or restaurants to eat, you know, kind of crap food. If you did this for 2 or 3 months, it's worth it. And I'm an extreme case because there's still a lot more pounds I want to shed. But I mean, if you could lose 20 or 30 pounds in 3 months, why not do it? 252-496-3610. 252-496-3610. Still plenty of time before the summer season truly kicks in for you to tighten things up a little. Drop some LBs. It's East Carolina weight loss. You lose a pound of fat every day naturally, safely, and do so without any counting points or calories. You're not going to exercise like today with the apple thing. No exercising today. No prepackaged meals, no drugs, no surgery, no injections, with no risk of any side effects. I was talking to somebody just the other day, and they were talking about side effects of one of the shots they were taking for a little while, and they got off of it because of the side effects. Head to EastCarolinaWeightLoss.com now for your free consultation. You can mention me there or just call 252-496-3610. Mention me, Patrick Johnson. And there you go. I hope you'll get involved. By the way, Pilk, my labs. I got labs after I did Talk of the Town Tuesday at the LabCorp, and I've got my annual checkup next week. You know, labs are part of that when you get old. And so I've seen the lab results, you know, because they put them in a portal and you can look at them, and pretty good. Actually, really good. Really good. I'm anxious. I'm actually looking forward to going to the doctor next week. So we'll see.
I'm glad to hear your labs are going good, but my biggest fear in the world is needles. So I'm good to say change the subject.
You know, meantime. I had, for the longest time, I didn't like needles because I have hard to find veins. Now, I think people who are expert at drawing blood and have done it for a while can feel and find my veins, but you can't see them. And my doctor, who I love, used to draw my blood, and she would hatchet me up. There was a doctor I saw here in Greenville years and years ago, and his nurses, it must have been the nurse that was waiting, you know, visiting with me before the doctor, must have been brand new at the job, because they couldn't get blood here. They hacked me up here, couldn't get blood, hacked me. My hands were all chewed up where they couldn't get blood. So I had a terrible fear of needles. Then about 11 years ago, 11, 12 years ago, I had a surgery, and there was a lot of blood drawn for that, and a lot of blood drawn in the aftermath of that. So I kind of got used to the needles. I'm not huge on them. You know, when I had my messed up shoulder beginning of the year, they stuck a needle in the back there and injected something. And whoo,
my heart rate has doubled since this conversation has started. So sports. Who was talking about sports?
Stick to sports. You know, I'm not sportsing hard enough.
No, you're just needles in too hard. We can talk about other stuff. You can get Coke on a political rant. We can talk about all kinds, which Henry said I'm not supposed to do on the sports show. We can talk about all kinds of
things. Stick to sports.
Yeah, I was like the apples conversation. I'm okay, like talking about our favorite types of apples.
What is your favorite apple?
Granny Smith all day.
Okay, that's right. You mentioned. I don't listen when you speak, so that's part of my arrogance. All right. So what'd you say? So. We got Courtney Layton today, works alongside me on ESPN Plus, broadcast of ECU softball. We'll have, two of the three games this weekend on the Plus. And, we're going to have, also this weekend, ECU baseball on radio. We'll tell you more about that. Mike Mullis is actually going to be with us tomorrow. To talk about that. And we're going to have Tom Shanahan in a little bit later on in the show as well. Now, Tom's got a new book about the segregation of college football in the 1960s. So we'll talk about that. Ruffin McNeil actually wrote the foreword for that. So I'm looking forward to talking to Tom about that. He's a longtime sports reporter, and he has written this book. So I think it'll be a good one to talk about coming up later on in the show. So we talked about Bill Belichick yesterday and the article from the from ESPN, which basically kind of took a really lengthy look at why Belichick didn't wind up getting a job after all the success with the Patriots. And so later on today, or I guess yesterday, Pat McAfee, we got this piece of audio yesterday, and even though Belichick was not going to be involved with coaching a team this year, he's going to be involved apparently in some NFL draft coverage from Pat McAfee's podcast, The Big Announcement.
The person that's going to be co-hosting the draft spectacular with us, that starts at 8 o'clock, and the countdown to the draft spectacular that starts at 7:30 is the greatest head coach of all time, the greatest general manager of all time, 8-time Super Bowl champion, ladies and gentlemen, this man, Bill Belichick.
Yeah! So, McAfee, that's the backdrop against an article today that says apparently after ESPN published the report about Belichick's failed job search in the offseason, McAfee took issue with the story. The report said the Atlanta Falcons didn't have Belichick in their top three of head coaching potential candidates, and the New England Patriots owner Robert Kraft allegedly advised Arthur Blank, owner of the Falcons, not to trust the 8-time Super Bowl winner. It also cited a source that said Belichick would never coach again in the NFL unless it were with Jerry Jones in Dallas. We told you that was some speculation yesterday. Pat McAfee and his co-hosts weren't fans of the story. Boston Connor, is that one of McAfee's underlings? Said I'm not sure. There was context from the story that didn't make sense. While McAfee mentioned the BS Belichick has been surrounded by. Connor said it was hard to believe Belichick was blindsided by not getting the Falcons job and questioned the anonymous quotes and bland statements through the piece. None of the quotes, they don't really say where they're from. Okay. Adding it was interesting the piece possibly referenced the show. I guess they mean McAfee's podcast. If they're burying Bill, I'm glad we're not part of it, McAfee says. It sounds like that is a lot of alluding to anonymous quotes and things like that. McAfee announced Belichick was joining the program's draft spectacular next week, as we just played for you there. So, interesting that Belichick is going on there. I think it's interesting, too, that McAfee is the one to invite him on and is hyped about it. It seems like they would be strange bedfellows, but I think obviously McAfee knows Ball and knows that the guy is, if not the greatest NFL head coach ever, he's on the Mount Rushmore. So this article kind of couched this thing as here's McAfee, the rebellious Pat McAfee, going against the grind, or going against the grain with the ESPN and going against them and, you know, pushing back. But what do you make of all this, Pilk?
Well, first off, Pat McAfee is, there has never been a former athlete that can market the way Pat McAfee does. He knows what's going to get him.
And I'm not a fan, but yeah. I agree with you 1,000%.
He is going to find a way to get ratings for him, and Bill Belichick does that. As it relates to the Belichick-Falcons thing and whether he'll ever coach again, look, Belichick's 70, 71. If he's going to take over a team, he needs to take over a team that's a great ship with a great crew that just needs a new captain. The Falcons are starting from scratch. They still got to build the ship. He doesn't have time to build the ship. He needs to go to a place that's already successful. So, yeah, I'm okay with him not going there. I think he will find a job if he wants it, and a team is willing to fire a head coach that is, you know, when they're already 11-6, 10-7. Like I said, he's not going to take over a team who won 5 games last year. But, yeah, no, kudos to McAfee. Look, this is going to get him ratings. People that hate Belichick are going to watch it. People that love Belichick are going to watch it. That means ratings.
Netflix, by the way, speaking of the Cowboys, have announced a new series set to premiere this summer, America's Sweethearts, Dallas Cowboy Cheerleaders. It follows the 23-24 Cowboy Cheerleaders from auditions through the NFL season. Didn't, like, E! Have this, or Bravo, or somebody have one of these shows once upon a time?
I thought it was like the Country Music Channel or something crazy like that at one time.
Yeah.
It was making the team, the Dallas Cowboy Cheerleaders.
Yeah. I guess there's a market for it if it's going to Netflix. I'm trying to find where my good friend Randy Capps, because, there's a couple Caitlin Clark. We've become the home of Caitlin Clark news here. Let's first hit this this deal, Pilk, where Caitlin Clark had this bizarre exchange with a reporter, fairly well-known reporter. Hit it.
Hi. Caitlin, Greg Doyle, Indy Star. Real quick, let me do this.
You like that?
I like that you're here. I like that you're here.
I do that at my family after every game, so.
Okay, well, let's start doing it to me, and we'll be get along just fine.
Isn't that a weird thing to say? Start throwing the heart at me, and we'll get along just fine? That's strange.
That's odd. So what happens when you get reporters that are used to interviewing smelly men and you throw an attractive woman up there and they've never talked to an attractive woman in a professional setting. They don't know what to do.
And Doyle's a name.
He is.
Doyle's a name. Anyway, let's see here. So much is made. I lost the picture here. I'm toggling between phone and computer. I am told, or I saw, I guess there's a lot of hubbubaloo being made that Caitlin Clark's salary for the WNBA next year is going to be like north of $76,000, maybe $79,000. You know, pretty good money, don't get me wrong. But it's lamenting the fact in the mainstream media that, boy, that's just a fraction of what her counterparts in the NBA earn. And I'm a big Caitlin Clark fan. But as my great friend Randy Capps tweeted out yesterday, PSA, WNBA revenue for 2023 was around $200 million. NBA revenue for 2023 was $10.6 billion. Yeah, facts don't lie in that case, right?
It's called capitalism. If you like socialism, move to Venezuela. They'd be happy to have you.
See, you got a political rant in.
I knew I was going to sneak one in.
I'm going to put a little politics into our sports today. So, apparently, a few days ago, Army and Navy played in a lacrosse game. Of course, we know Army-Navy. That's a huge rivalry anytime those two institutions match up. And so, this was courtesy of the CBS Sports Network, which apparently aired the LAX game. And they came in. This is Major Ryan Scott with an electric guitar rendition of the national anthem. A fun fact about me, Pilk, I'm a sucker for, like, really for the national anthem performances, especially like good and unique ones. That's kind of, I'm a sucker for those. Like, there was the little blind girl about 8 years ago that sang the anthem before one of the, I think, the RNC conventions, and she was awesome. So I'm a sucker for national anthem performances. So we're going to play this one going to break. We're going to have Courtney Layton with us when we come back talking ECU softball. Tom Shanahan still to come, but this is Major Ryan Scott bending the strings, a rockin' rendition of the national anthem going to break on the PJ Show. Hit it.
Our national anthem.
Download the new IBX Media app now and get the show for your ears and eyes.
Doesn't it look great on me?
This is the Patrick Johnson Show on 94.3 The Game.
Okay, welcome back. Coming up this weekend, it is going to be East Carolina softball on ESPN Plus, originating from the production facilities at ECU. They'll also have the Saturday lacrosse game, which will be against Old Dominion at 2 o'clock on the final home game of the year for lacrosse. But the Pirates on the diamond Friday night, Friday evening at 5 o'clock afternoon, and right now scheduled for 11 on Sunday morning. We're going to have yours truly on the call of those games, along with our next guest, Courtney Layton from WNCT Digital. ECU softball alum joins us here, and Courtney always dresses to the nines. I look like a dork on vacation, which basically is my life now at the working man's beach. All right, Courtney, how are you?
I'm good. How are you? I'm at work right now, so but I had to make time for your show, and I always make time for you, Patrick.
Well, I appreciate it very much. All right, let's talk a little bit about ECU softball. Let's talk a little bit about this team losing really in a kind of a heartbreaking fashion last night to UNCW down in Wilmington. They tied it up with a couple of runs in the seventh inning. And Wilmington, as Shane Winkler told us today, kind of small balled them to death. And then they get an unearned run to the Seahawks in the bottom of the seventh to win in walk-off fashion. So, look, tough loss there. Dropped the series in Tulsa, although they picked up a win against a really good team in that weekend set. Kind of got spanked by number three Duke, number one Duke, depending on where you are in the polls at that point in their last home game. So where is this team right now as it tries to build momentum towards, you know, the conference tournament?
Well, I think it starts with culture, and that's what they've done so far. Obviously, like you said, kind of a tough loss for them. I think leaving runners on base has been an issue for them, an ongoing issue so far this season. Getting small balled has been hard for them. Defense has looked really solid so far, but errors are going to happen, and unfortunately that did happen. But I think it boils down to leaving runners on base and making adjustments. I think they do that when they want to, but it's not a consistent thing. But I think this team and this program is on the up and up, and I don't know why in conference tournament they can't make a run for it and hopefully go to a regional or something. But I think they're on an upward trend for sure.
South Florida is the opponent this weekend, and traditionally they've been one of the best teams in the AAC. I guess to a degree they're having a bit of a down year, Court, and when you look at them coming in, they are seeming to be peaking at the right time, though.
Yeah, USF was the team to beat when I was playing at ECU. I mean, they were the school to beat. They had Georgina Corrick, who was their pitcher, who now plays professional softball. So you can imagine how that was. And Ken Erickson, who is their coach, who was Team USA head coach and just has been a great coach his whole career. So they were the team to beat. I think, you know, obviously players leave and programs go through ups and downs. I don't want to say they're necessarily on a down right now because they're still a good program. When I look at the American, they're just not the team to beat anymore. I mean, you look at them in the standings, and they're not in the top anymore. Still a great program and great coaches. They're just not where they were. So I think that we have a good matchup coming this weekend.
Courtney Layton, who works with WNCT Digital and also ESPN Plus softball analyst for East Carolina, joins us here today on the Patrick Johnson Show. Back to the Pirates. What a great year that Emma Jackson, the Virginia Tech transfer, has had. A little banged up. We don't know her status as of yet for the weekend because she did not play last night. But another transfer that's really been impressive, a little streaky at times, but been impressive, is Morgan Johnson. And she hit big home run last night and had a four-hit game. And I think as East Carolina makes its way through the next few weeks, both in the midweeks and especially in the conference weekends, she's got to be a big factor.
Yeah, and I think anytime anybody goes 4-for-4, you obviously have to look at them and say, so you can do this all the time. You're a great hitter. You're a great player. I know Coach Shane Winkler and the program have mentioned that she has struggled with mindset. Being a former D1 athlete, I know that mindset is hard. Confidence is hard when you're going through these streaks. And she came from Clemson, coming from an ACC program. You come into this now, and things do look different. I mean, you're coming from an ACC to a mid-major. And having that mindset coming into this school is so important, and knowing you coming from a big school like that, people are going to rely on you. Look at where you're from, and that can be a lot on your shoulders. Kind of like you said, she's been streaky. But what she's done is gone and found ways to take care of her mindset, and it's showing. And you can tell when she's in her head and when she's not. And when she's not in her head and just up there having fun, she is a dangerous player. I love watching her play.
Courtney Layton with us here. I think one of the, if you could call someone underrated for the Pirates, maybe doesn't get quite the spotlight that Johnson and Jackson have gotten transferring in, but has been consistent and is still a very young player in her Pirate career, is Anna Sawyer, who played at D.H. Conley. I've always thought Sawyer is one of the better hitters I've seen hit. You've seen a lot of hitters. Where do you rank Anna Sawyer as far as, you know, hitters you've seen in college and young hitters especially? And then how big is it to have kind of a local kid on the roster like that?
Well, I mean, in terms of hitters and consistent hitters, especially, she has been one. I don't remember the last time I saw her fall off or say, you know, I don't know if Sawyer's going to. I really don't know the last time that happened. I have enjoyed watching her play consistently. She's one of the best hitters in college softball right now to me. I just think that she's great at the plate. Having a local kid is so important. I mean, you had Holt Naylors with football, obviously kind of a hometown hero, but now with softball, it's a hometown kid. Obviously, lots from North Carolina, same with baseball. But, I mean, she's from right up the road. And so she's got experience in Greenville. I'm sure she went to a lot of ECU softball camps growing up. This program isn't new to her. Then she comes in and gets to shine when she gets to ECU. And she's just been such a good addition to this program since she got here, for sure.
And pitching is important, as we know. Really been impressed with the freshman Taylor Apple this season for the Pirates. And then Addie Bullis in her last go around as a senior has, you know, especially on the road, last couple of series on the road has pitched very, very well. So that's a good 1-2 combination to have. And you have Jordan Hatch, who's started off the year really hot. She's trying to recapture some form. So in the circle, do you think ECU has enough to maybe make a run that we kind of like we talked about at the beginning of this?
I think that that might be an issue. That is one of the only downfalls that I see is the pitching. Now, Taylor Apple, I think she kind of came out of nowhere. It's not that she was ever a bad pitcher, but it's like it was like, oh, you know, Taylor Apple. And then it's now it's like, oh, great, Taylor Apple's in the circle. I'm excited about that. Jordan Hatch has been a consistent name for the program. I've known about her since she got here. She actually lives in my old room when I lived in a house in college. But I've always thought she was good.
Oh, Addie Bullis, obviously. Oh, no. Oh, no. Oh, no. If those walls could talk. All right, go ahead. I'm sorry. Yeah.
Just, you know, Addie Bullis fighting off injury and being a transfer. She came in with a lot on her shoulders, and she's still battling that injury every single day. And so I think that having those pitchers, and obviously you have a few other that are on the bench, those being your main is going to be tough, that's all you can rely on. But I think that it could be enough to carry them through tournament if they are all on. It's a dangerous staff when they're all on at one time.
Yeah. All right, Courtney Layton with us. Let's tell the folks very quickly, you played at ECU from what years to what years? You were a star outfielder who made a great diving catch at Wichita State. So what years were you an ECU softball player, Courtney?
2017 was fall of my freshman year. So 2017 to 2021, I was at East Carolina. Best years of my life. I would go back and do it again if I could, for sure.
All right. And then at WNCT.com is where you're doing a lot of things now. Your boss is a friend of mine, and he sent me a screenshot, I think it was, of some article that's up now that has a picture of my fat face with and you looking dazzling as always. So what is that article about at WNCT.com, and what kind of contributions are you making to that website in regard to that, I guess, series that you're putting out?
So actually, it was your friend, who is my manager, who decided to set it up. And it's kind of a blog that we decided to do. And it's called Calling the Shots. And it's where I just talk about and kind of what goes into it. I actually wrote one today because we got done talking about weather today with the head coach at ECU and how weather can affect commentating in ways that some people might not think about. Obviously, as a player, it was always like, you sit around for 3 or 4 hours. Is it going to rain? Is it not? And then by the time you pick up a softball, you haven't stretched out your legs in 4 hours. And luckily, we haven't had that issue yet this year. So, you know, one of our games got moved up, but we weren't sitting around waiting for the game
right.
to start.
Right.
And
right.
so that's definitely an issue if you're a player. I never thought about it from a commentating standpoint. So the article that I wrote today was about that, but I write about our experience commentating together, and I made a vlog that was funny that I need to make a new one. But no, I mean, that's kind of what it's about. It's on our website. I write a new one. I try to every week, if not every week, every 2 weeks. But I do really enjoy that. I'm going to try to continue that even after season.
Okay. Very excited.
You enjoy doing it. Okay.
You can write about the experience on the Patrick Johnson Show today is what you can do next time if you're starving for content. All right. Last thing, you are a Caniac. How do you feel about the Carolina Hurricanes chances to string together 28 wins and hoist the cup?
We'll be okay. After that, I'm not sure. I know getting swept in the Eastern Conference Finals last year was definitely a punch to the gut. So I feel like the guys are ready to come out and play better than they did. They weren't okay with the way things turned out last year. And so I think that they're more prepared. I think the Islanders, I'm not going to say it's going to be an easy series by any means, but I think that that one will be okay. We just need to make sure everybody's healthy, keeping the right people in the net. I think we have a shot at the cup, but, I mean, the Maple Leafs are good. The Bruins are good. Whoever, I mean, you just got some good teams in there. And after going to TD Garden with my mom to watch them play the Canes last week, that's a loud place. And so, you know, Boston's a hard place to play in, but I think Raleigh's a hard place to play in too. So we have a shot. I'm not counting us out, but I'm definitely not saying it's 100%, but... Yeah,
Courtney, I'm excited. Courtney Layton, big Caniac, as Trip Tracy would say. All right, Courtney, thank you. We'll see you tomorrow night or tomorrow afternoon late for Pirate Softball on ESPN+.
Cool, thank you.
Thank you. Great to have you on. Great job. Courtney Layton with us here. Awesome stuff. All right. Tom Shanahan is coming up next. Got a brand new book about segregation of college football in the 1960s. Looking forward to talking to him about that. But first, Philip the Ref Pilkington with a 94.3 The Game Sports Flash Update.
Thanks, P-Man. Starting in Pirate Athletics last night, the softball team dropped a tough one 5-4 to UNC Wilmington. They will be back in action this weekend as they host the Bulls of South Florida. Make sure you head on over to Maxar Joyner Family Stadium. Admission is free all season long. Also, the baseball team will be at home this weekend hosting Wichita State. You can catch all three of those games right here on 94.3 The Game with Scott Rogers and Coach O. The conference women's golf tournament wrapped up yesterday. The Pirates brought home a fourth place. After shooting two over par as a team, SMU brought home their second straight crown. It was announced today that Jim Zocchi will return to the booth to be the voice of Pirate football this season. This will be his second year being the voice of the Pirate program. The Canes will open the playoffs on Saturday at 5 o'clock against the New York Islanders inside PNC Arena. However, the next six games have not been scheduled. Last night in the NBA, the 76ers defeated the Heat to become the 7th seed in the East. That means they will take on the New York Knicks, and the Bulls beat the Hawks to stay alive. So now the Heat will host the Bulls to see who the 7th seed is. That game will be at 7 o'clock tomorrow. To be the 8th seed. The winner of that will play the Boston Celtics. We'll take a timeout here on the Patrick Johnson Show. On the other side, Tom Shanahan will join us to talk about his new book.
Taking the rage out of your drive home.
You just cut me off, but it's no big deal.
Patrick Johnson on 94.3 The Game and the new IBX Media app.
Long time sports reporter Tom Shanahan has a new book out, and it is about the segregation of college football in the 1960s. Ruffin McNeil, the former Pirate coach and ECU Hall of Famer, wrote the foreword in the book, and we'll talk all about that with Tom Shanahan, who joins us right now. Tom most recently had done some work covering the Pirates for the NNO. Hey, Tom, how are you? Great to see you again.
Yeah, I'm doing great, and thanks for having me on and for having this chance to tell the story. It's a largely unknown story about what happened with college football integration in the 1960s, and there were a lot of pivotal people in North Carolina and schools, and people don't know it in our state, and they should know it. And thank you for helping me spread the word.
Yeah, my pleasure. And I've always enjoyed your work, as you know. The Right Thing to Do is the name of the book, The True Pioneers of College Football Integration in the 1960s. Let's start with the Ruff and McNeil part of this, because obviously Ruff grew up in some of this. And why did you choose Ruff to write the foreword to the book?
Yeah, so as I was starting to wrap it up, I started thinking about a forward to it. And Ruff has really kind of lived this history in a unique way, and he actually intercepts with Michigan State. The book does have a lot to do with Michigan State because Duffy Doherty led college football integration with his teams. They were the first fully integrated teams in the country in the 1960s. But Ruff intersects with the team through Jimmy Ray, who was from Fayetteville, played at E. Smith, which was at a segregated school. And Ruff's brothers, father and uncles played with Jimmy Ray. So he was always aware of him as a kid when he grew up in Lumberton. And Ruff had told me once I got to know him that Jimmy Ray inspired him to get into coaching. And so let me give you a real quick background on Jimmy Ray so you can understand why black coaches didn't really have many people to look up to in the 70s before Jimmy Ray. And Jimmy Ray was the quarterback at Michigan State when they won the national titles in 1965 and 1966. He was the South's first black quarterback to win a national title. But he also was a pioneer when Duffy Doherty hired him as an assistant coach. And then when Jimmy Ray went on to the NFL in 1977, there were only seven other black assistant coaches in that 28-team league. And then by 1983, Jimmy was the second offensive coordinator in NFL history when John Robinson of the Rams hired him. And throughout this time in the late 70s and the 80s, he became a mentor for many black coaches, including Tony Dungy on down. Tony Dungy mentioned Jimmy at his Hall of Fame induction. And he also, while he was traveling the country, scouting players, you know, going to colleges, he kept his eye open for a black coach that needed a chance, the chance that he got from Duffy Doherty, because most black players were not getting those chances. And so this inspired Ruff. And Ruff has had a great career, and it should be celebrated. He shouldn't be remembered for East Carolina making the mistake of firing him, and he should be celebrated. And I just thought he was a great choice to write the foreword, and he did an excellent job for me.
That's awesome. We all know that Ruff is a great, just a great guy, and you gave the Jimmy Ray background. In some of the materials that you initially sent over, Ray was part of an Emmy Award-winning NFL Films documentary in the last few years, wasn't he?
Yeah, the NFL 360 NFL Network put it out in 2023. It was called The Indelible Legacy of Jimmy Ray, and it won a Sports Emmy. It was the director producer was a guy named Osahan Tango, who was actually from Naperville, Illinois, but he played at Georgia Tech. And what I found interesting about Osahan is because this has been my gripe with the NFL Network beforehand and still with the Big Ten Network, is they don't understand as a guy like Jimmy Ray and Sherman Lewis, another pioneering black coach and offensive coordinator that got his start from Duffy Doherty at Michigan State, they didn't really have a chance to be a head coach at the prime of in their prime right. years. And, right. and so you can't grade them on the same scale as Tony Dungy and Dennis Green. But the network executives, they don't think he's worth a story because the only successful coaches, black coaches in their mind, are Tony Dungy and Dennis Green. Well, Osahan Tango is a guy in his mid-30s, so he grew up well after the Civil Rights Movement. And then he went from the North to the South, and he saw how the South could be different for a black man. And he started, once he came across my book, Ray of Light, my first book about Jimmy Ray and Michigan State's 65 and 66 teams, he started to wonder, boy, what was it like for these guys to emerge from segregation and still manage to make their way into the NFL? And so he understood what a dramatic story, what a great story it was that most national writers, I'm unequivocal on this, most national editors, writers, publishers don't understand. They think college football integration began with Bear Bryant waving his wand in 1970.
Right.
And yeah. They've got it all wrong, and the national media is conveniently taking the easy story like they usually do, and Bear Bryant is the easy story.
Tom Shanahan, the brand new book, The Right Thing to Do, The True Pioneers of College Football Integration in the 1960s. I have to imagine that the integration of it was just like society. I'm sure integration came with a lot of setback, and change did not come easily.
Yeah, it's a very slow process. Each school making their individual contribution until finally enough dominoes had fallen by 1970 that it was possible for Alabama to finally integrate. And when I say possible, Bear Bryant finally opened his eyes because he dragged his feet. He had Alabama's campus was desegregated in 1963. He had the 1964 and 65 Civil Rights Acts on his side, yet he waited until 1970 to integrate his program. And an excuse that the national media always makes for him is that Bear Bryant would have, George Wallace, the racist governor of Alabama, would have fired him if he hired a black coach. Well, George Wallace wasn't in office from 1967 until 1971. So that was 67, 68, 69. Bear Bryant continued to have only all white classes. Meanwhile, Kentucky, an SEC school, was integrated in 1966. And Tennessee in 1967. And even Auburn, Alabama's in-state rival, was integrated in 1969, and nobody fired Auburn's coach, Shug Jordan. But even before that, and this is why I say North Carolina has played some pivotal roles, we had Michigan State as the first fully integrated team playing in the South in 1964 at North Carolina. And then in 1964, you had Bob Grant from Jacksonville, North Carolina, integrating at Wake Forest. Wake Forest was the first ACC school to recruit black players out of high school and then continue to recruit black players. They don't get enough credit for this. The national media tells a story about Daryl Hill was the first black player in the ACC at Maryland in 1963. Right. True. But he was a senior transfer from Navy, and then they didn't follow up with recruiting more black players for the next 2, 3, 4 years. So really, the pioneer is Wake Forest.
Yeah, and I think maybe their basketball too was the first. I know we hear Charlie Scott a lot, but if I'm you know recalling correctly, their basketball team had that going.
I didn't realize this until I did the research. Jack McCloskey, of course, better known for his NBA days with the Pistons, he was the coach at Wake Forest, and he was recruiting black players at the same time as Dean Smith, and maybe 1 year after. I'm not sure on that. I'd have to double-check the facts. But the point being is you only hear about Charlie Scott and Dean Smith. You don't hear about the other black pioneers who faced all the abuse from fans and all the resistance from society. They went through all those same things. It's a lot like Jackie Robinson broke the color line in 1947 in April with the Brooklyn Dodgers. But when Larry Doby was the first black player in the American League with the Cleveland Indians in the summer of 1947, he went through the same experiences. But we only hear about Jackie Robinson.
The Right Thing to Do is the name of the book, The True Pioneers of College Football Integration in the 1960s. Where can people get the book from, Tom?
Well, they can go to Amazon, or they can go to my website, tomshanahan.report, and there are links on there to purchase the book, and I get a better royalty straight from my publisher, and I get a better royalty from my publisher than I do from Amazon.
So go to tomshanahan.report and go there, so Tom will get a little scrilla for this. I mean, it's a great story, but you got to pay the bills. So any other books that you're thinking of endeavoring on, or that are kind of projects you'd like to work on?
Yeah. Well, first let me add also, if they people do go to my website, look for the graphic with the end game. And that's my podcast series with a lot of these true pioneers. And one of them is Bob Grant, episode 21. So you can listen to Bob's words about what he endured at Wake Forest. And, you know, because Bob, this is the other thing about Michigan State. Michigan State was a North Star for black kids in the South before the Southern schools started opening their doors. Bob Grant was high school rivals with Jimmy Ray, and he planned to go to Michigan State until the Wake Forest coach, Will Tate, called up the Bob Grant's high school coach and said they wanted to be the first school. They wanted to desegregate, and they had targeted Bob Grant as a perfect kid for them to recruit. And Bob Grant followed his high school coach's advice, understanding that it was going to be tough, but it was going to help open doors for other black kids in the future. And that's exactly what he did. He's been honored by Wake Forest for their Trailblazer Award. And in 2022, the NCAA also honored him. Those podcasts are on there. And as far as my books, I wrote a children's book also that you can find on my website. And that's called Bubba's Dad, as in Bubba Smith's father, who was a legendary coach in Beaumont, Texas. And he was a chief engineer of Duffy Doherty's Underground Railroad, sending his son Bubba and many players from the Houston area. And it's called Bubba's Dad, Duffy, and College Football's Underground Railroad. And he drives the train through the South, picking up all these Michigan State pioneers. And on the way through North Carolina, I had to have him go through Fayetteville to with Jimmy Ray, but out of respect to Ruff, because Ruff is such an important figure. I hope someday the National Football Foundation's Bill Dooley chapter will honor him for a lifetime achievement, or maybe even the North Carolina Sports Hall of Fame. Jimmy Ray deserves to be in there too. But out of respect to Ruff, I had the train drive through Lumberton, and Bubba Smith's dad instructed all the players to wave to him, said, "There's the future coach in East Carolina. He was inspired by Jimmy Ray."
Awesome stuff. Hey, Tom, great to see you again. Thank you for this, and good luck with the book.
Yeah, thanks for having me on, Patrick.
All right, Tom Shanahan, great to have him on today. Check that book out wherever, or Amazon, as you said, or TomShanahan.report. Thanks, too, to Courtney Layton for being on with us. Nice job by her. You can catch Courtney this weekend on ESPN Plus and coverage of ECU softball with yours truly. Thanks, as always, to Philip the Ref Pilkington. And we will come back at you tomorrow morning for Talk of the Town on 103.7 WTIB in the Greenville area. And then back here for the Patrick Johnson Show. It's a Mully Friday. Mike Mullis will be with us. We'll talk the Pirates on the diamond. Have a great rest of your evening.